What one thing do you wish you'd have known 10 years ago?
I think the one thing that I wish I knew 10 years ago is that my intuition is always right. 10 years ago, I think I would have said, oh, I'm 50%. 50% of the time I'm right. And actually it's 100%. It's 100%. And I say that without ego. That's not meant to say that I can't make mistakes. I'm specifically talking about my ego. My ego? Oh my God, imagine. I'm specifically talking about my intuition. Not my estimation, not my this based on experience. I've seen this happen before. I'm talking about that inner voice that is like, nah, don't do that. Actually, you should just probably go for that. This is right. That's a great idea. Doesn't matter if no one else gets it. Go for it.
That's a really interesting thought and concept, because really what you're talking about there is a feeling, right? And can feelings ever be wrong? Because if they're your feelings, then they are always correct. So, you know, that's a really, I never thought of it in those terms, but
I think
I'm here agreeing with you.
Yeah, I think some feelings can be wrong. So if you have, I don't know, an argument, a person A is here, person B is there, and that Jay-Z line, which I think he lifted from someone else, but I don't know where it comes from. But a wise man once said, don't argue with fools, because from a distance, people can't tell who is who. I say that to say, if you're the one from the distance and you're just seeing this bat, 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 you know, and you get annoyed at those people, or you're just like, well, I gravitate towards the one that's wearing the blue. I don't care about the red. Not me talking about Bloods and Crips on your podcast. All jokes aside, I feel like blue is my colour, da 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 da. But meanwhile, the one in the blue is the one that's done the heinous crime. Is your feeling kind of right then? And I don't think that's intuition. I think that's just based on memory and nostalgia and like those snuggly wuggly things that like the next day you'll have a different opinion on. I think intuition is innately connected to whatever you want to call it, ancestor, spirit, that feeling, DNA, innately who you are. Don't know if that makes sense, but that's what I think anyway.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for that, Kevin. Hey up, and welcome to the Strategy Sessions. My name is Andy Jarvis. I am the host of the show and the strategy director at XMO Marketing. The voice you just heard before then was Kevin Morosky. Kevin is the creative director at POC. He's a Virgo, a film director, and just a general all-round creative. He's also a South London boy, and that comes through in spades in this interview. It's a real look through the lens of his creativity. It's how his life affects his creativity, how he brings his full self to what he does, how his experience has shaped him. He's an author as well. He's written two books. One is a book, in his own words, about black queer poetry, and the other is a love letter to black women, which is going to be out in the next couple of months. As always, as podcasters have to say, links to both of those in the show notes. Probably doesn't need much more introduction from me. I will just get over to listen to the rest of the interview with Kevin. It's in depth, it's insightful. This is, of course, episode number 3 in the Black History Month miniseries. And in this episode, probably more than the first two, we dive into the black experience and what that means and how that shapes us. But we also talk about his creative work and the processes that he goes through and some of the amazing stuff that he's pulled out of this. So have a listen to all of that. If you are listening, wherever you are listening, I should say, please do either subscribe to the podcast, like the episode, leave a comment, leave a 5-star review, changes depending on whatever platform you're on. And if you're one of those weirdos who watches the podcast, now I've started uploading that onto Spotify. Hi, that's for you. Right. Anyway, enough of me. Let's get back to when I met up with Kevin the other day and we had an interesting, enlightening, fascinating, meandering chat about creativity. Here we go. So, Kevin, welcome to the strategy sessions. Thank you for joining me this evening and being part of the show. I'm really looking forward to where this conversation goes.
Thank you for having me even just taking the time out to even know who I am, to even ask me. Like, it's always a shock when I get these things through. I just feel like I'm in my corner doing my thing, and I'm like, oh, someone called, noticed me. Great, of course. So thank you.
Well, I first came across you, maybe this is a good place to start. I'd seen things written about your latest book, which is due out in the future. I don't know if there's a release date yet, you can talk about that, which is called Black Women Always. And what really struck me about that was in the description of it I was reading, it said it was a love letter to black women. Do you want to talk to us about your book and the explanation, you know, sort of the thought process behind it and how you came up with that?
Yeah, 100%. It is out in the future. It's out the 14th of March, 2024. I think the first book that I had released was self-published, and that was a choice. I had been talking to publishers about different things, and I had had an idea for a book, and they didn't really want to do that, which is their prerogative. Like, it's their money that's going to pay for the thing. But I was like, well, no, this is the thing that my culture needs right now. And I belong to different intersections, different parts of culture, I stand at the intersection of different parts of different cultures, is what I'm trying to say. And specifically, I really felt like there just needs to be a very black, queer book of poetry about love, and I knew how it needed to look, and it wasn't necessarily something that everyone needed. I just knew that I needed to put that piece of work out because it would start conversations that everyone needed. The book might not be the thing for you, but the way that specifically that part of community that I belong to would react to it would then cause different conversations, because we're all connected as far as I'm concerned. Like, what I do affects you, what you do affects the next, the next, the next, the next. And they just didn't want to do it. And I was like, cool, I'll just do it myself. Like, it's not that deep. And so I did, and it did really well, which then allowed them put me in a position to have the conversations and basically do what I want, which is always the best scenario, especially for me as a Virgo. Just let me get on with it. Just let me do the thing. Don't worry about it. Because of that, I knew the next kind of book that I wanted to do, just because I moved out of that space slightly, I guess, in terms of advertising, was some type of advertising book. I remember when I first got into advertising, all the books were very much written by middle-class, pale, stale men. With great advice. I'm not knocking any of those books, but what I noticed is that they didn't take the approach that I had to take. I have no choice but to step through doors with all of me. Mm-hmm. It's not an option to play that game. I'm not that type of person. And no tea, no shade to anyone that can play that game in that way. Like, I rate it and I'm in awe of you. But me personally, yeah, let's say I'm a bit too rough and ready for politics in that way, let's so to speak. And those books, they didn't talk about what it is to be gassed in an interview and for agencies to really want you, only for you to step through those doors. And they're like, whoa, we were joking about diversity. Tone it down. Don't do this. Don't do that. Calm down. We only talk about diversity in October. That's when we have budget, and we might do one day in February, but that's more of an American thing. And so all of these books that I read, trying to understand what was going on around me, as I said, didn't really represent me or my journey or I think emotional intelligence. I'm not here sitting saying any of those men weren't intelligent. I'm just saying my type of creativity, I heavily rely on emotional intelligence because fundamentally, if it is advertising and we are talking about that dirty word capitalism, we are always selling to humans. We are always selling to people, which I know that that's why I was really excited to talk to you about, because I know like this is within the DNA of what you do as well. Mm-hmm. So the idea of selling to people, but then not putting people at the center and really looking at who they are, why they need this product, how is it going to improve their lives? How is it going to allow them to communicate even more? To me, seems like a no-brainer. Because at least we're doing good with what we're doing to a certain extent in terms of giving people what they need. And also the sales are all right. You can actually have best of both worlds. Treat people kindly. Anyway, all of that to say, we decided on an advertising book. When I thought about the subject matters and how I do advertising, I came to the conclusion that the architects of who I am, the way that I move through this world, whether that is me being very sassy and reading people for filth, maybe whether that's me being empathetic and using that talent, whether it's problem solving, all of these things for me, I got taught by Black women. Whether that's my mother, whether that's my best friend from when I was 15, who I used to, we used to dress in the same tracksuits and just run around Croydon, literally terrorizing everybody. honestly, I'm not even joking. And that would also include, you know, being in fights, in like a really dangerous, violent fights because of who me being who I am in terms of sexuality, and those girls jumping in and just being like, absolutely not. All of who I am is really, I'm indebted to Black women. I really am. And so once I dove into the book, I was like, well, this book has to be dedicated to them It just has to be, because if we're talking about my successes, if we're talking about how I've done the work that I've done, how I've become who I've become, I think it's kind of gross. It doesn't sit well with me just to be like, I'm just this great guy out of nowhere, and I've done all of these things and made all of these adverts and like not say look out at, loud.
Look at my superb success that I've built out of no one's support.
Out of nowhere. Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, one of the things I most detest within pop culture is how Black, brown, and global majority culture is used almost as a piece of like tracing paper. And so they'll go over and be like, da, 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 da. And then it's over here. And it's like this new trend that we just found. It's like, bruv, you were just mining Black Twitter or Black, like, come on, behave. And so that's really where the book came from. I really wanted to write something that A, I would have liked to have been able to pick up as a young junior advertising person. And also, I realized it was a space where I could give over my space that I was able to obtain back and be like, what have you guys got to say about this? So the book is set up in a way where it's like essays, as I said, like intuition, money, integrity, safe spaces, etc. And I have essays in the book of like how I approach them or I think about those things. They are then followed by conversations with different Black women around me who I have relied on and leaned upon, Black women that have fed me, picked up the phone every time I wanted to cry, and I was like, no, when I go in that office tomorrow, it is on. And they're like, no, like, what's the best way to really deal with this?
It's an interesting area of the Black community, and I'm probably going to pick up two different areas, but I'll stick with the current book first, in that my experience of the Black community is that women play a really pivotal role in in community. So, you know, everyone has an auntie who, you know, is like, and I'm thinking, my auntie, you know, Nen, you know, and how she shaped me and shaped people around her. But very much when I also reflect on it, there's certainly from, so my family's part of the Windrush generation, but there's a large element of those aunties and those people and those women I'm thinking of were very much seen as they only really had a place in the home.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that anyone actually said those words out loud, because my auntie would have probably taken your head clean off your shoulders if you had said that. And she had a full, you know, she worked her whole life as well. But very much, even though they held the community together, were homemakers. And that was seen by the men of that generation as being subservient to them who were moneymakers. And you, so when you've written a book about kind of love letter to black women, you know, when I started thinking about it, it does sort of come through. Actually, the black community owes a lot to black women. Everything. But maybe doesn't show that in the right way a lot of the time.
No, I think black women are very much, they're taken granted for, you know. They're taken granted for, and a lot of the frustrations that I feel like black men feel, they take their frustrations out on black women. I think about being much younger and the relationship between my father and mother, and looking back and realizing that at certain points my mum was definitely depressed with stuff that was going on, but at that point
you don't know,
we didn't really use that. We did therapy, self-help, what are those, like, that type of language didn't really exist. I also think about my father coming back in from being out, whether working or whatever, and always coming in with this energy that is very heavy and also depressive, but not having the language for that. And then really deep in, like, my God, like, it's hard out here as it is now with everything that's going on. I know some people think that we live in a post-racial world after the magical year of 2020. That's
cute. Whatever those people smoke, I want some. That's all I'm saying.
But honestly, it would be lovely to take, like, honestly, you lot out there that were looking for a new best black friend during that time. Like, I hope you enjoy your drugs. But if I think about, even now, at least there's a little bit of a platform, whether that's Instagram or whatever, to be like, this just happened to me, and find community and find people to rally around you and be like, that is not on, what can we do, la 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 la. My parents, our parents, they didn't exist. Where is the outlet for that type of thing? So I think a lot of time the frustration really lives, the frustrations of our elders and even men today, sorry, I'm not even trying to separate it, it's all connected, today, turn around and because you can't beat up your oppressor, you almost want to beat up your caretaker. And I'm just sick of it. We do owe everything to black women. And yes, it is making homes and making us feel loved and welcome and all of those things. But also it's the ingenuity. Ingenuity? That isn't a word.
Not one I'm familiar with, but you know.
Yeah, I fully just made up a whole word.
Listen, I'm down with that. You're a creative man. That's fine.
What is it? Ingenuity? What am I trying to say?
Are you trying to say intuition? But not...
No.
No, okay.
It will come to me at the end, I promise you. I'll be like, oh, it's this word. Of making things work, of making £20 last 2 weeks, of all of those things. The way that I handle money now, and hustle money now isn't based on,
ingenuity.
Other than, what did you say?
Ingenuity, is that what you were going
yes.
for?
Yes.
There we go. We got there.
I don't know what the hell I said. But even, making money, £20 last 2 weeks and, the way that I look at and deal with money now and figure and budget isn't based on anything that they taught me in school. It's based on watching my mum be like, right, this is how much we got. So this, that. It's all of those things. It's, they're just magical. And the idea that I couldn't connect them to my advertising work, my creative work, would be a complete lie. Because all of that is me. So every time I step through a door, as I was saying, actually, it's important that all of me that can step through.
And feel free to tell me to shut up and move on to talking about your creativity, which is where we're going next. But just to go back to your first book, and, you know, for my sins, I know very little about the black queer community. But the bit I do know tells me, or I presume tells me, that being black and being gay is not an easy space to be in. There, you know, I think back to that same group of elders I grew up around. And I mean, you know, homophobia wasn't a thing because everybody was just homophobic. And, you know, I'm not suggesting it was worse in the black community than in other communities.
But you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. So there is a miss to living within that, right? Sorry, go on. It's just
you mentioned that was the sort of a subject matter of your first book. And how did you navigate those sort of early years to come to write that book? You know, because it must have been a journey to take you to that point to write the book.
It wasn't that hard. I'm from Croydon. I know how to fight. So no one can really tell me what I can and can't do. I'm
South London boys, right? No, nobody messes.
Like, it's cool. It's whatever. I can match any energy. Do you know what I mean? I think growing up again, even if we just back and forth between what we're talking about, even me coming out at like 15, 16 really wasn't a thing. There were one or two people who had a thing to say. Those one or two people had to visit a hospital. And I made my point and we moved on. But in terms of who I was supported by, all the black women, my mum, all of my friends in my workplace at the time, I was kind of still at school because I wasn't really meant to be in that particular job, but we needed money. So had to kind of fake, not kind of, definitely faked birth certificate to be able to get the job. But with that being said, it was my aunt that was like, oh, I know how to fake this. Come, let me show you how to do the thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is what
you
I mean.
Hustle though. Sometimes, yeah.
What a hustle. What does Jill Scott say? We've got to swim upstream. Like, sometimes you've just got to do what you've got to do because I don't want to blame. I never like when people blame life for things. I think it's the society and the world that we live in and people around, because life is such a beautiful thing and is always a beautiful thing. It's the way that us humans bloody contaminate it. But you've just got to do what you've got to do. But in terms of that book, it was based on one particular relationship that I was in. And it was just one of those big ones that I kind of it was one of those big ones that kind of like rock you for a bit. And poetry's always been one of my loves. I'm absolutely obsessed with Christopher Wallace, Notorious B.I.G., and specifically the way that he would make music, which is not to write things down and to kind of just practice those things in his head over and over and over again. So actually, all of the poems within this book just sat in my head for probably about 6 or 7 years. Just sat there. And then so when it was actually, when people asked me, like, how long did it take you to write out all of those things, I was like, oh, they were just in my head. Like, I just wrote them out. I just never put pen to paper until it was time for those things. But to work through those emotions and to, I don't know, I guess some people would be like, oh, it's really brave that you put that thing out. But I'm very privileged in that I've always been protected in that way, and I don't have a big coming out story. Do you know what I mean? I don't have this, like, and then I got kicked out and la la la. And that's not to like make light of those situations. I'm just acknowledging that I'm more privileged than most queer people and what they kind of go through. It wasn't that hard at all. But what that point that you made earlier when you were like, well, everyone's homophobic, so there was no homophobia, is valid, because the opposite of that is true. Because we've also entered this space where like, oh, it's ridiculous if you're homophobic, so no one's homophobic, so why would you need that book? Why would we need specifically to make a book like this? And it's like, yeah, you lot are too comfortable. You don't understand what's going on. And the book is very, you've probably never seen it, but the book is specifically brown in terms of skin, pink within in terms of blood, guts, and there's a specific reason and why I've done it in the way that I've done it. But yeah, just went off on one. Apologies.
No, it's there's a lot of important points raised, and we'll put a link to the book in the show notes. So if you want to get hold of the book, just click the link and off you go. But I think you make an important point, and I don't want to downplay it. I just want to talk about a similar point from my experience, more about race than about sexuality, where I often talk about this, that in the 80s when I was growing up, you knew who the racists were because they often wore T-shirts telling you that and chased you down the street. Those weren't great days, right? But at least you knew where all the racist people were. Now, people know they're not supposed to be racist. Yes. So they're racist in WhatsApp groups. They were racist on social media. They haven't gone away. Still there, you just don't know who they are and where they are. And actually, you know, so then people tell you, oh, it's a post-racial world, and you're like, is it? No. You know, so it's I think a similar point from what you were making, that actually people tell you that these things aren't a problem anymore because they can't see them as explicitly in front of them. It hasn't gone away though, has it?
And also sometimes the work as well, it's a really limited view of looking at problems, because sometimes the work isn't about saying the thing exists, which more time my work isn't about. It isn't actually, my work is about the healing. So this book isn't meant to be like, aha, again, we're proud. Like, nah, it's not that at all. It's just a nice moment for any queer kid. What I love the most, you know, like, yes, lots of gay, queer, all sorts of people have brought my book, but like an overwhelming amount, you know who brought this book, that book? Mothers and fathers, and send me messages like, I kind of thought my kid was queer and I wasn't sure what to do. And then I saw your book and so I was able to just buy it and be like, oh, I got you this book. It's like queer poetry. And just test the waters with. And I'm like, that's dope. That's what the work should be about. It's not necessarily about, because for me personally, I don't really have time to sit down and debate a racist. We're just gonna fight. I'm probably gonna win. We move on. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's long.
Kevin had a choice to make, Kevin chose violence.
Yeah, 100%. I want problems. I don't want no peace. With any racist. But in all seriousness, it's like, again, 2020, you man had your time to sit down, have your summit and all of the things and be like, oh, blah, 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 blah. Cool. You all admitted that the thing is real, that white supremacy is a real thing and all of the things that dangle off of it, all of these isms. We all admitted it. Great. So now, if I have to clap off your head top, it shouldn't be a surprise, because you're doing mad things. We've all set the rules. That is my world in post 2020. Yeah. I think it's about the healing. I think it's about, you know, even with Black Women Always, this next book, it is about me just like acknowledging the Black women in my life and how they have influenced not only my moral compass, but also the way that I move in rooms that people are confused why I'm in them, specifically in advertising, when I have been in charge of projects and my budgets are in the millions. And is he going to be all right to handle this? Like, all of that stuff, even though my track record is my track record, I'm able to like, cool, I'm going to keep my head held high. I'm going to be shady in a way that you will realize that I read you for filth, but a year from now, and you'll sit up and be like, oh my God, he was calling me ugly in that meeting. I've just realized what he meant by that reference. All of these things are from my cheeky aunt or this person, or not even person, but this black woman or this or this or that. So all of it just ties in, and the conversations within the book, a bit like this conversation, they meander. They go all over the place and words have gotten wrong and we laugh about it. And I love that it's also, for me,
that's how conversations work, isn't it, though?
Yeah.
They're natural, they're organic, they drift.
Yeah.
It's not polished. Life's not polished. Life is about those bumps that you make into people along the way. So
100%. Yeah. 100%. And those bumps and those interactions then further shape you, and then you pass it on to the next person and so forth and so forth. And that's beautiful. That's so wonderful. So how do we protect that, and how do we kind of ensure that people are allowed to just be on the paths they're meant to be on and bark whoever they're meant to bark and be like, rah, that was an experience. But instead, we have to slow down and make choices and fight racism or homophobia or transphobia and all of these things. For the longest time growing up as well, like, as much as I was out and bad, elephant man, I would just also say, I'm really busy being black. I don't have time. I'm trying to figure out, like, I'm fighting for my life within the system. I'm very busy being black and I have things to get on with. And thankfully, I'm now at a space where I'm able to encompass all of me and all of those parts and be very active in all of those different communities. But for a moment, I really had to just, like, focus in on the one thing and really get that foundation right and come to conclusion of, like, being black, brown, wherever you're from, you are not a monolith for, you're not a clear representation for everyone that shares the same spaces as you. And so specifically with blackness, for me, everything that I do is black. That's it. That's the rule. So I love a Biggie Smalls, but also over here, I love a Green Day. I can be wherever I want to be. Everything that I do is completely fine. Everything that I do encompasses my blackness, my queerness. It's all the same thing. Blackness is as expansive as the universe, you know?
So what's really clear, I think, from talking to you is that, well, you said, look, we're meandering, absolutely. But you are, you know, what you bring to your work is your life comes to your work. And you really, it's not just a job necessarily, it's a vocation for you to put yourself into your work. So the question I have really with it, you know, we're marketing on this podcast, but do you have, in the most boring question I could possibly ask you, how do you intersect with process when it comes to making great creative if you are really pouring all of yourself into this? Because it feels like what you're saying is you are developing ideas based on your whole life experience. But if that is the case, isn't process, does that mean process is not important? You just need to be there and be the spark? Or how do you, you know, are you process as well as this experience?
I definitely love process as a Virgo. I'm not the type of person to just rush in. I'm very, I love strategy. Mm-hmm. You get different creatives at all types of levels who, again, are very, I don't want to say old fashioned. That's not the right word. I think actually entrenched in, toxic masculinity, and because of that they walk into a room and think that their job as a creative is the most important thing going on. I don't believe that for a second. All of my years within agencies, I learned how to produce. I learned how strategists got to their points of view. I learned how to talk everybody's language of what they do. So therefore, I understood what their fears and problems were going to be in terms of a particular project. Because of that, the way that I work on my creative or create my creative for whatever the problem may be naturally encompasses procedure and it's almost pre-fabricated in a way that allows everyone else to get their opinion in. Because really and truly, procedure and the way that people view things, it's just the way that we did it up until yesterday. And I always feel like you can kind of like change it, but then the language within that is, well, how do you get people on side to do so? Mm-hmm. And my life really influences my work. You're 100% correct, but also I'm dedicated and interested in the new and the next. I think my life influences my work is just from a space of like, how are people going to love this? How are people going to feel relatable to this? And I also just feel like if you are a good creative or you're striving to be the best possible creative that you can be, there is no problem that you're unable to answer. And if it does get tricky, then that's probably one of the best briefs you've ever had in your life, because that's where you're meant to be kind of pushing yourself. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, I think procedure is like innately important, and it will lend itself as well. Procedure isn't this rigid thing that's immovable. I don't really look at procedure like that. I look at procedure as a thing that is put in place to protect whether it's brand, the project, whatever. And
it's a bit like the stage, isn't it, for a ballet, in that the edge of the stage is the edge of the performance,
100%.
But it doesn't stop the creativity from taking place on the stage.
Exactly.
It's the rules of the game that you're playing, and the rules of the game change depending sometimes on the product or whatever you're advertising, but you still have a stage. Sometimes the dimensions change.
Even if that was one of those kids' books and it's like you're meant to colour within the lines, mm-hmm. right? Cool. Take it further. It could be paint by numbers, and the fours are meant to be red, and the threes are meant to be blues, and you have to be in the lines. Okay, I'll be within the lines, but you know what? I think the blues would look better in the fours and the reds would look better in the threes. Should we just try that? Should we see? Because that's fun. That's exciting. So that's what I mean. And that's where your magic really comes in, you mm-hmm. know, and everyone leaves that room feeling inspired and excited about the work they're doing.
So being a creative has taken you into the role of chief creative officer. Do you call it an agency? Is it a movement that you founded? How do you describe it?
I would say community. I think POC, which is People of Culture Collective. I'm not a fan of people of colour as a term. I think you mix those words around enough, you end up at coloured people. It's a lot.
it always felt like an American term to me, but felt kind of seems to be bleeding it. I mean, I'm okay, but it's not a phrase I ever use. Yeah,
it's not my BAME, people of colour, but POC, People of Culture Collective, really started as a WhatsApp group. I've been in advertising industry for a minute. My first boss, I think that's really worth actually telling you. I had started out as a photographer, and I'd shot for wherever, you name a magazine, especially 2000 to 2010. I'd been publishing in those spaces.
In magazines heyday as well. This was the absolute pinnacle of magazine culture, right?
Yeah, because actually, you know what? You're 100% right, because that doesn't really exist anymore. Like, what is a magazine now, really and truly? You're right. So, yeah. Yeah, it was a big deal. Anyway.
Kind of a big deal.
But what I realized is that there was a lot of there was a lot of get me in spaces because it was a great diversity hire before people were, I clocked that before it became the routine thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like it. And I realized there were lots of other photographers around me and I was working more than them. But these people seemed to be buying houses and going on holiday. And I was like, something's not connecting here. It's not, I'm missing something. I don't understand what's going on and whatever. And within that, back then, I used to only shoot on film. I really stayed away from digital. And then more and more tech came in and your phone had a camera. And so bit by bit, you just drop into digital. And so then I moved into film from then. My thing is always story. And it literally goes back to Biggie Smalls again. I couldn't rap like that, but I felt like I could snap like that. So my style was very much, if you listen to any Biggie Smalls line, any, pick one, you've got like a million pictures in one line before he even hits the next line to write. It's so vivid and to the point. And even within my advertising work, KISS, Keep It Simple, Stupid. But my thing was like, how would Biggie write this? What would be Biggie's elevator pitch? Anyway, all of that to say, I was starting to try to have more meetings about bigger work. And I wasn't really handling those meetings well in terms of negotiations, in terms of selling in all of these things. And I don't know what possessed me, but one day I was like, go and get a job in advertising. Go and do that. And you'll learn everything that you need to learn. And I don't know why. I don't know why I thought of that. I don't know where the idea came from. It just really dropped in my head one day. And I was like, boom, okay. So I ran around and I had, you name it, agency. I had a meeting with. They were more than happy to meet with me. They were excited. They had seen this and that. They had known that I had been involved in whatever, whatever, whatever. But every time I brought up the word culture and... culture and the value of culture, nobody had any answers for me because everybody wanted to pretend as if they were mining cultures and subcultures to get their ideas. Nobody was admitting this back in 15, 14.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? No, like we've just got a great team here and we're ready, fresh. It's like, bruv, like, your lead creative just mines Twitter and like picks up new buzzwords and then throws them into a thing. What are you talking about? Anyway, long story short, I met Nana Bempa, who's the co-founder of POC. And at that time, she was the head of production at this particular agency. And I went in and met her, asked her about culture as a black woman. She was like, yeah, like they don't talk about it here and I'm sick and tired of it, la, la, la. And it was just a general meeting. It was just like meant to be a vibe. And she was like, look, I can't just hire you to put you into the advertising department, but I can let you know what's going on. And actually, like, if you wanted to come and work in the department with me as an in-house editor, maybe. I was like, say no more. I just need a little crack in the door. I just need to get in the building. Say no more. And so that's what she did. She hired me. I went in and I was an in-house editor. I would go in at 6 in the morning, get all of my editing work done. 9 o'clock, I was ready for all of, I knew where all the meetings were and what all the pictures were. And I would just roll up into meetings. And it would just be like, can we help? I was like, yeah, I've got some ideas. And I would just like go for it. Bearing in mind, back to the Croydon thing, You think I'm scared of you lot in your little room. Like I've fully been in knife fights. I don't care about you in your boardroom and ask me why I'm there.
But it is a different, it's a different type of pressure, right? So I'm pretty certain I've never been in a knife fight, right? But I grew up on a council estate in Bradford. And yeah. There's some hairy moments in there, right? As a kid. And you learn to navigate those street smarts, I think, stay with you throughout life.
Yes.
But it is a different sort of intimidation between walking down a street where you feel you can read that room to being in the room with privately educated Oxbridge kids who are kind of all in the same blazers with everything locked up, to come in there and be different and to go like, I'm going to tell you how to do your job. You know, I'm going to challenge you and say they're not the same sort of pressure. They're two different pressures.
Yeah,
one that you kind of spent a whole life living with and another one that's completely new. So, yes, there's maybe some transferable skills, but that's a different pressure to try and go and fight your way through.
It's a different pressure in terms of, like, is it a threat? Mm-hmm. And would I prefer to be back in Croydon, or are you going to be in this room and make it do what it needs to do? That you're right, is a different pressure. I'm not saying they're the same thing. Mm-hmm. I'm saying I've actually been through things in my life, and you lot are hilarious to me. You're all looking like lunch. Like, on top of that,
you're all looking like lunch is probably going to make the clip for the promo for the trailer, right?
You know, seen that clip of like Denzel Washington? He's like, I'm leaving with something. I'm from around the way. Like, it's very much that energy. On top of that, Virgo. On top of that, gay. So the sass is there. Everything is there. Like, it all makes sense, and it wasn't that hard. But I worked my ass off, and I think within a month to 2 months, I was fully inserted into the creative department. And to make a long story short, I was there for 2 years, moved on. And Nana, for some reason, will pop up. At this point, me and Nana become really close and the best of friends, because she had been operating in that space very much as the palatable, polite black woman. Mm-hmm. And I think we bring definitely something out in each other. I was like, nah, don't let them talk to you like that. La, 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 la. I literally was just cussing people left, right and center. And then she would come in and kind of fen it as well. And we had beautiful moments as well of like, one day she's like, I got us a gift. I think we can try them together. And it was like a double pack of silk and satin pillows cases, because we've been talking about looking after our hair. And she hadn't been able to have that interaction. And that's really,
I feel like you're definitely, while telling the story, also throwing shade this way when you're talking about needing pillows for your hair, right? Okay. That's okay. That's all right. Listen, I'm a big boy. It's fine. I can take it.
Yeah. That's literally because you didn't buy my first book.
Okay. Hey, listen, I deserve it.
But all of that to say is, I tell you all of this just so you can get the full picture of the dynamic, and somebody who didn't have a university education going to such a space like that. Mm-hmm. I often think of it of like, you remember the film Big and Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
And when he's just like, no, this is rubbish, da 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 da, because he's talking from like a real place of still being a kid when he's talking about the toy. Anyway, we left there and we would end up in different agencies, and my job title had changed, me and my creative partner, until we were higher and higher, and she was doing freelance at that point. So she was no longer ready. She wasn't my boss, and we had become friends outside of work. And the same conversation kept popping up between us, which is very much like, where are all the black and brown people? Like, why is it every agency I go to, it's just me and you and maybe one other person? And so we started this WhatsApp group, thinking only like 10 or 20 people would join. And within like 24 hours, there was like 200 and something people in there. And back then, I don't even know what it is now, actually. I don't think we have a limit on our group because we have a thing with WhatsApp. But back then, there was a limit as to how many people you could get into a group. So then we had to like start another one and all of this. And that was 5 years ago this year. And what that has turned into is an agency and production arm, as well as Tupac, which is a community interest arm. Everything that comes out of POC is based on what the community needs. So basically what happened is you create a safe space like that, and all of these brands come up and they're like, yeah, we wanna come and join you. And we're like, well, no, you're not a safe space. That's why we had to make a safe space. But there was work there. And what we realized we could do is really control the narrative, get the right money for people, put the right teams together, have integrity within our work, walk away from work. The amount of work that we turned down in 2020, it would make some people's eyes water, but we're in a position to actually hold on to our integrity and be like, no, we don't believe in anything that you are saying. You will not be here in 6 months or a year from now with this type of funding or whatever. So the agency really grew out of a space of like over 1,000 members who are different types of creators, whether that's producers, writers, creatives, filmmakers, editors, all sorts, and briefs coming along and being able to be like, right, this is actually how much we need to make this completely work. This is what people need. We are able to make our own rules within POC. We very much, any project that we're on is really scheduled around childcare. Directors and producers are paid parity. I think I said that word right. In terms of, we realize, like, you know, directors normally walk away with like 10-20% of whatever the budget is, whereas a producer would just be on a day rate and might do more days than the director somehow, but doesn't. It's like, we, you know, so I say community, it has a lot of things kind of going on, but really we just expand in whatever way the community needs us to, and it's led by the community as well.
Do you feel that, you know, there's often a feeling sometimes when you set up something like POC that you might only end up getting the, for want of a better phrase, the black briefs? You know, are you only getting the briefs? It's like, oh, right, this is a diversity angle. Let's go and talk to the diverse team. Or do you get the, you know, you get every brief now? You know, or has that changed over time? How is that, you know, what's your view on that?
Yeah, that is a great question. It's a great question. And the answer is that, yes, they used to just try to run up on us and give us all of these briefs. And we'd be like, oh, you're approaching us because we're a black-owned agency. Boutique agency. Oh, no. Yes, you are. That's what you're doing. And it's offensive. So we won't be working on this. But thank you. And that's how we dealt with it. So when I talk about 2020 and prior to 2020 of turning down work, there's a really well-known shoe brand, shall we say, that lots of people use for weightlifting. Mm-hmm. And they had come to us to work on a particular thing, and we had done loads of work. They disappeared. They then came back round and was like, oh, we did some internal work, and this is what it is. And when I looked through the work, I was like, this is all the work that we've done. Please don't make me burn you down on the internet. Behave. So they realized what they had done and admitted such a thing. And then they came back and was like, you know, we found some more money. There's 50 grand here. We'd love you to help us with the recruitment and la, 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 la. And we were like, no, we don't want your money. Just when that work is done, you should say a thanks to us. And please don't knock our door again to work with us. Again, with much of my work, sometimes the intent isn't just about making a work. And sometimes in that particular case, it's not about healing. What that was about was really being like, you can't actually take everybody for an idiot, and you're going to learn in this instance what this looks like to be told no, and for you to go away and think about what you're doing. And then things like that are discussed within the network as well, to be like, so this is how we handle this, and this is that. So it's common knowledge. So then more people are empowered to be like, well, no, I know that you try this over here, so this is what we're going to do. Mm. But in the beginning, yes, there was a lot of just really ridiculous briefs that made no sense. And also within the briefs, the thinking, or some of them would have like initial creative involved that were problematic, that were really, you know, we recently did some work with Nike, and they had come to, we was helping them with, the brief came through and it was about their festival and this creativity about young people and la 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 la, and we're like, great, would love to like, let us know more. And then as we went into it, it was like, I think originally they were going to call it like something like the Black Festival of something. And we were like, you need to slow down. Like, you can't be calling your festival, but I can't remember the type, but it had black in it. And it was like, no, you can't, you cannot do that. Mm-hmm. You don't have the right to be using such language within your festivals. Like, your main character, yes, is the black demographic, and you should be thankful to us for that. Great. But other than that, you need to find a way to do that. Those situations are interesting, because actually what I will say about that particular night stream is that they were receptive. They were like, oh my God, we never thought of it like that, la, la, la. And then you realize, can't walk away from this, because actually I can teach you lot to be 1,000 times better because you're actually listening. I think the ones that we definitely walk away from, you can tell, are just the ones that they're only quiet so they can speak next. They're not listening to what's coming out of your mouth or anything like that. But it's difficult. It's difficult. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it still happens now, and we just have to walk away.
It's hard, isn't it? Because sometimes as well, you don't have the energy to want to teach all the time. Sometimes you just want to, like, I'm a creative, I'm a strategist, I just want to do the thing that I'm good at. It's kind of tiring having to teach people all the time. But on the other side of things, I'm always aware that when someone asks a genuine question, they're asking because they want to learn something.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes then, you know, if they are with their ears open, wanting to listen and wanting that advice and humble enough to go, do you know what, we got this wrong, then actually there's a teaching experience that can happen there. And learning, you know, we're all trying to learn and expand, right? So it's difficult, isn't it, though? But you only have so much energy sometimes inside to be able to go.
I agree. I think the other part of that as well is trying to make people understand that, A, and then B, also not every black or brown person is going to have the same response. So Andy might be like, nah, I'm not in the mood for teaching. And Kevin might be like, yeah, okay, like, let's sit down, let's talk about it, because I'm feeling it today. I feel like, you know, it's giving people space to be fully realized people, fully realized creatives, fully realized strategists, especially in the subject of who they are, the essence of who they are. Like, how are you going to question how they want to communicate and talk to you about that? You can't. So you're going to have to take the answers you get.
And this view as well, that there's this sort of homogenous black community, is, as a black person, as a marketer, it's equally hilarious, right? Because there's 5 million black people or something in the UK. You know, we've got a mixed race guy from Bradford, and I don't want to put labels on you, but, you know, a black queer guy from South London. But we're both lumped in the black community. We have different experiences, different backgrounds, you know, different views to this. So you say, all right, you know, can we call this the Black So-and-So Festival? You might get two different answers, just two different people.
Exactly. Right?
But we're one homogenous black community.
Exactly. And what that actually lovely in a roundabout way circles back to what we're saying at the top of this, the most magical, beautiful thing about blackness is the chance to bump into each other and find those things that are in common. So you just said, my elders, Windrush generation, I know exactly what you're talking about. I know then what your grandparents' house looked like and what it smelled like and felt like. Do you see what I mean? Like, those are the beautiful things to find out. Like, allow us to find each other and communicate with each other and find those things in common. And the things that we don't have in common, for me to be like, rah, Andy, I didn't even know that. I'm going to go and look that up, and vice versa, mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, that's the magic of marketing. That people, any human being, one thing that we all have in common is the love of discovery, of finding new things for ourselves.
Are we still talking about crocheted throws over the sofa that's still got the plastic on in our grandparents'
house? Yes,
we're talking about the same grandparents.
And the
map of the island on the wall in like a bellow sort of, yeah.
And the shells, and that little bag that had a little piece of Jamaica in it, and the shelving unit with the plates that no one ever used, and there's always those brown plates, fish, and the doilies, and all sorts.
I have a fish, which when my auntie died, I was asked, and she didn't have much, but I said, you know, do you want anything from your auntie's house? And she had these two green and white fish, which were like ornaments that stood up. They are, by any measure, horrific, right? They're awful to look at. But when my auntie died, they're part of my childhood, right? So I have them. Sadly, I didn't bring them up for this, but they're downstairs. And people come into the house and you can see them going, what is that crime against aesthetics? And you're like, it's my auntie's. And it's a part of me. But, you know, that 1970s, 1980s Caribbean house, I mean, there was a lot of crimes going on in those houses, yeah. Mostly against fashion and taste and decency. Mostly against it.
But they're so indicative of, like, us as, I really don't want to say British, but it is what it is, British black people, yeah. In terms of coming over and making it our own, and we're going to have this and this because we've got to do something. We as black people are excellent at pulling different things from different spaces and creating a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent at it. And when that's just allowed to be free, especially within advertising and marketing, like somehow marketing and advertising doesn't become that dirty anymore, and it's just a space to connect people in a really wonderful, meaningful way. Yeah.
I'm going to pull up the stumps there, right? I'm going to cricket terminology. I'm going to pull up stumps and we're going to stop there. Before we go, I'm going to ask you one more question. Very yes. Different to everything else. Give me a book recommendation that people can take away from this episode. Other than your books, right? That's my only rule. You can't recommend your own books, right? They're already in the show notes. But do you have another book that you would think people should read?
Yes, by a very good friend of mine, Kelechi Okafor, Edge of Hair. It's a collection of short stories where very much science fiction, and the short stories with the characters, the black women within those stories, do not face any kind of harm or danger. There are either the observers or receivers of love, and it's just a really lovely, easy read. Like, it's really lovely reading such a thing and knowing that the characters that you kind of fall in love with are in no danger whatsoever, but yet commenting on the world in a very real, futuristic way, a believable way. So Kelechi Okafor, Edge of Hair.
Perfect. And there'll be a link to that in the show notes too. So thank you very much, Kevin. Thank you for your time this evening. It's been absolutely superb. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, and sorry for waffling so much. Apologies.
Honestly, it's been brilliant. Absolutely beautiful.